Hey, son, Svejsan. It's Jorgen Sundberg here with the Employer Branding Podcast, brought to you by Link Humans, London's employer branding agency. This week, it's all about how to turn around company culture by focusing on people, customers, and employees. Let's start the show.
Greg Reed, how are you?
Very good, thanks.
Tell us about HomeServe and what you do there, please.
Sure. HomeServe is a home assistance company. And what we do is when customers have issues in their home, primarily with their electrics, water, or heating, we go help them out. So we've got about 2.2 million customers in the UK, 7.8 million globally. In the UK this year, we'll do 1.4 million jobs in our customers' homes.
Right. So it's essentially a subscription service, like an insurance against your boiler breaking down and so on.
Yeah. That's one way to put it. Yeah.
Great. And so how would you describe the culture there?
Well, the culture here is a very customer focused culture. And we do that through the frontline staff. So, we have a saying here that if you look after the people, they'll look after the customers and the rest takes care of itself. And so that's a very simple kind of mantra, but we live it every day. And it's really made a difference and changed the company.
Okay, so things weren't always so honky-dory down at HomeServe. Can you tell us what happened in the years of 2005 to 2011?
Yes, I think 2005 is when the Financial Services Authority came into being. And at that point, HomeServe should have transitioned from a sales and marketing company that had some service with it to a company that was, fully understood all the financial regulations and things like that. It sounds odd for a company this size, but it never really sunk in what it meant to be a regulated company, especially as it comes to insurance. So I would say back then the company was very sales focused and very growth focused. And the front line, which is sort of your defense against anything ever going wrong, they were incentivized in the wrong way. So they were incentivized on sales and growth as well. So there really wasn't that laser focus all the time on the customer. And people asking me a lot, joining after that period, did I have to get rid of a lot of people? Were there bad people there? Well, I'd say all the senior managers had to pay with their jobs. So they had to go, but the front office staff and the engineers and the guys, they were all very good people, who trusted the people who were leading them. And they weren't empowered to really have a say in what was happening. That was one of the bigger changes we had to do, was to put that safety net in place, which is, our frontline staff.
Okay. So basically, was it in 2014? I think, the largest ever retail fine was issued to HomeServe. So it was something like £30.6 million. So that made a big dent in the books, I can imagine. And also, so you're saying the whole management team had to go?
Yeah. So it was a strange period between 2011, which is when the company voluntarily stopped selling, and 2014, which is when the fine came, because the company had been very transparent and talked about the fact they were under investigation. Normally, people don't find out a company's under investigation until the fine comes. Mm-hmm. So that entire period was, there was this sort of cloud hanging over about what was going to happen. And then there was no doubt the FCA used a new calculation on HomeServe for the first time, which is the way they do it now with everyone. And it resulted in a much, much larger fine than had ever been issued. Since then, RBS has had over £100 million fine. So we're in the background as far as retail fines go now. But at the time, it was quite shocking. And having been here then for about a year, it was quite an emotional thing to read about the company that you really cared about at that period, and I had staff that I cared about. And to read that fine, it actually made me sick when I read the reasons for it. And I also knew that it was going to be something that we would have to carry around, that, you know, we owned responsibility for, and that if we were going to move forward, we would always move forward with that in the background as a backdrop to everything we did.
Yeah. I mean, what impact would you say this had on company culture and the employer brand as well?
Yeah, well, I think I was, you know, I was a big part of that. And I would say, you know, the decisions that were made on who would lead the company, and then the types of people that they recruited, the shareholders of the company, and our founder, Richard Harpin, who's a great man, he didn't want this to sort of be his legacy. He was off, you know, starting new businesses in other countries when this happened. And so he really laid the groundwork for us to be able to not waste a good crisis, as we like to say, and really go back to basics and do things that a listed company normally couldn't do. So there were products, you know, that I got rid of. There were inefficient things that, you know, we just made go away that impacted the income, but we were trying to get ourselves to a steady spot where we could rebuild the company around the customer. And you can't do that when you've got expectations going on all the time. So I think in a weird way, the crisis made the company stand up and look at itself in the mirror. And really, there was a decision, a choice made about what the company was going to be. And, you know, lucky for me, I got to join, and we were going to be about the customer, and we were able to put some things in place.
So could you talk us through the steps that you took to turn around the business out of HomeServe?
Yeah. So I think the first thing that we did was, I think, you know, what I mentioned, the initial just not selling anymore was a good symbol out to everyone that something was going to change. And then from there, my boss, Martin Bennett, and I and a few other people, we sat down and we looked at, you know, if we were really going to be a company that was about its people, who wanted to create a great environment for customers off the back of that, how are we going to rebuild the credibility, really, of the company for the staff? You know, because the staff felt incredibly let down and betrayed. And so the first thing we did was we looked at our products and things that we didn't think were core to what we did, like legal cover. We just canceled those products and gave up some income. Some other products we thought maybe they were a bit too expensive. So, you know, one product we cut the price in half and we fixed the value. And then the biggest thing we did was we looked at, as an insurance company, every time we told the customer no, was there a reason for that? You know, and I think deep down, the reason had been, you know, some McKinsey consulting and that type of help that had come along and said, oh, if you put this in the T's and C's, you know, you could save some money by not going out and doing these jobs. Martin and I had a belief that on a product that was discretionary, anytime we told a customer no, it would destroy value. Mm. So we went and we changed everything about the way the products were built. And one of the things that the FCA is pleased about, and, you know, they have very little to do with us now, except for just checking in every once in a while, is the fact that our claims rate has doubled over the past 4 years. So we go out twice as much as we used to with a similar amount of customers. So the customers are getting a lot more value than they used to out of the product. Okay. And then, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. And then once we had, you know, that credibility established with the staff, we told them that, you know, how we wanted customers to be dealt with. And we really told them that, you know, when you're on the phone with a customer, and if there's something else that you want to do, then you should do it. And I think the staff reacted to that, as many frontline staff would at a company, which says, that sounds nice, but we're not sure that you mean it. And so we put a mechanism in place where every day the staff sends us sort of requests for things that are not in the product. So customers who aren't covered for things, or even people who used to be customers and aren't customers anymore, who phone us and ask for help. And then the staff get together in the morning before they start their shift at 8:30 on a VTC across all four sites. And they go through this list of things, and they decide which things we do and which things we don't do. So they are things that the FCA would be happy for me not to do, because the customers essentially don't have that cover. But what we're trying to do is get the staff to not just go from A to B like a typical financial services company, but for them to go all the way to C. And the only way we can get them to do that is to really empower them from the ground up. And we've had that meeting now every day for 3 years. We've had 10,000 different inquiries into it. They aren't all about doing extra things for customers. Some of them are just better ways to do things. But we have, to the tune of £500,000, let the staff solve issues for customers. So vulnerable customers who are in their homes and don't have anyone else to turn to. If an engineer visits them, one of my favorites was a 95-year-old customer. An engineer visited. He was clearing the customer's drain. The customer told him he hadn't had a warm shower for 5 years. The engineer asked us if he could put a shower in for the customer, a heated shower, which we said yes. You know, and that customer's life's changed. And that engineer feels a lot better about the company that he works at and the mission that he's on when he can, you can really create that sense of purpose. And once we had the customer sorted, and we had sort of customer, the product sorted, and we had customer first sorted, then we went back out and we talked to staff about something that a lot of companies do, but that we think we've done better, which is really about people promises, which is how we treat each other and how we treat the customers. So once we had the people promises done and really embedded into the culture and into the language of how we talk to each other, really the only thing to do then was just to consistently reinforce that from the bottom up and the top down. And we do, I think for a company our size, an amazing amount of communication that is always on, and two-way communication, never stopping, starting from the idea that we don't have offices, that, you know, I sit out on an open plan floor with lots of agents who give me lots of helpful tips and ideas as I try to go about my day, to we have a video broadcast to the whole company every 2 weeks. We have something called Yammer, which is like Facebook for work, but it's on steroids for us. So we had 6,000 comments last month alone in Yammer. So you have staff who are not afraid to put something out on an all company forum and say, this doesn't seem right. We had a brilliant one over the weekend that I got involved in. And it essentially gives the management team the ability to, you know, participate in those water cooler conversations about the things that, you know, people on the ground think, you know, if I were running this company, this is what I would do. Gives you that visibility in there. And then, you know, depending on what the ideas are, you can either say, yeah, we're going to do that. Or you could, you know, most of the time, sometimes they're not great ideas. Or sometimes I just give the context for what I think. And so, you know, we never say that's a bad idea that you've posted that comment, and we never take them down. But what we will do is give that context that people sometimes want. And quite a few times we will say, you know what, you're right, we're going to change that. So I think in a nutshell, that's sort of the trajectory that we went down.
Great. Okay. Could you give me just a little flavor of this people promise? What's in the people promise? What's the format of it?
Yeah. So we have our customer promises came first, and I sort of skipped over those, but they are five things that are the touch points for where we touch the customer. And we developed those talking to customers and the staff in sort of a workshop type session, and not just any customers. We invited customers who had complaints against us. And so we ended up with this great list of customer promises. Then our staff were telling us, you know, once we'd done customer first, the customer promises, fix the products, what about the people? We always felt there was an order to this thing, and that on the people side, once, you know, there was credibility that what we were doing was real, we could go back out and really create something special for the people promises. So they are similar to things that you would see in any other company when you have these type of commitments. Dare to care, do the right thing, own it, always improve, win together, trust each other. And what we've done through the communication, through things like Yammer, is given people the ability to talk about these things and to, you know, and that's how we recognize and congratulate each other. And it's also how we criticize each other. So, you know, we have a reward and recognition system, which I just used. I sent one to an engineer today for £50 for owning it, because I'd been involved in a complaint. It ended up being the gas board's issue, but the engineer, instead of just saying, call the gas board, stayed with the vulnerable customer, called the gas board, showed the guest board what to do, had them fix their stuff, and then he left. Now, these are people who, you know, engineers, you know, they need to do a certain amount of work and get things done. So when they stop and they take the time like that with a customer, it's great to have a way to say thank you for owning that, and for the CMO just to fire him out 50 pounds. And the way we've set it up, and we haven't been abused by fraud yet, is anyone can send anyone one of these. And so I think last month we did 3,500 within the company of 3,000 people. And people just send, here's £5 for doing a great job, here's £10, here's £20. And the only thing that happens is their manager takes a look at it and, you know, makes sure it looks like it's worth the amount, but they don't really question the sentiment. So sometimes it might come down from 100 to 5. But then they just click it and let it go through. And so these promises are like not just in the lobby. There must be maybe 200 or 300 copies of them around all the rooms in the, you know, in the company. Mm-hmm. So every single room has them in them. And we have lots of other places. And it really just is part of the language of what we do. I know it sounds very corporate, and then it sounds like, yeah, a lot of companies do that, but I think you'd have to come here to experience it, you know, or you know, to see it in action, to see how much this sort of how we treat each other means to the staff, and then how looking after people, looking after the customer really becomes an ingrained sort of thing, and it becomes almost like a right. And when people are not able to look after the customer in the way they want according to these people promises, they get noisy very quickly. And then, you know, as a management team, that's great because it raises, you know, a light on issues. And a company this size, like I said, we do 1.4 million repairs. So we're going at 4,000 or 5,000 times a day to different homes trying to fix different things. It's a lot more complicated than, you know, my old world of banking of shifting money back and forth between accounts because so many things can go wrong in those situations. So you really need people who do feel empowered to deliver that little bit of service on the end and feel that they have the time. And also with customer first, that you know, they know that they can spend the money and it's up to them.
Yeah, great. Okay. So that was for your existing people. Did you take any specific measures to attract talent? So employer branding and recruitment marketing?
So we have, I know we have a limited amount of time, but we have a strategy that we've had in place since 2014. You know, the most important thing on it is to add value for customers. The second thing is for it to be easy for customers. The third thing is the front line first. Well, way down at number 6 of 7 is one called build the brand from the inside out. And my view and the view of the management team was that if we were able to get this service right, and we were able to get that right a million times a year in someone's home, that those customers would start talking about us. And that not only would the customers start talking about us, the staff would start talking about us, and that they would recommend us. And you would get a little bit of traction along that customer service value train working in your direction. So starting with that notion, we said we need to win a couple of awards that were or be in spaces that were sort of third party, that were respected, that would sort of tell our story. And the point of the service is the point of the service. The idea of winning the awards is if we could win a few awards and attract some attention, then we could do a better job of pulling in talent. So we really focused on Trustpilot. So we've got a great score on Trustpilot with 13,000 customer reviews. On the staff side, we decided to focus on Glassdoor. And when I mean focus on it, I mean really, really actively encourage our staff because we think that they love working here. We can tell from our engagement score and from our sort of attrition, staff attrition, things like that. We know how they feel about working here. So why not just take the dare and encourage lots of them to go online and talk about the company in an anonymous review. And that's what we've done. We've put messages on the big message boards around. We've put messages on everyone's desktop. And, you know, you get bad reviews, you get good reviews, and, you know, the good reviews tell a story because it's consistent and detailed. The same sort of things come up, like the staff list customer first is one of the benefits, which I'm particularly proud of. And then in the cons, you get the same cons, you know, over and over again, the same types of things you would get in a big frontline business like ours, because they're just some people aren't going to enjoy it. But if you go in there and you read the reviews, one of the things that's really important for us is you will read our responses to the reviews. And we are very open in public about addressing the cons or giving context about why they are that way, or just someone like me going on there and saying, I'm devastated that this is what you feel about work. It shouldn't be like that. You know, why don't you come see me? And I'm a bit known here for having lots of one-to-ones. I've met with 1,000 different people over the past 4 years, so I will do it. And so you really end up with that vibe out there that it's a good place to work. And then all of a sudden you get in the Bloomberg top 10, you get in the Sun top 10. Just recently we were named in Marketing Week's 15 best places for marketers to work, alongside people like Aviva, BT, Nando's, Heineken, a couple of my favorites, McDonald's, one of my kids' favorites. You know, and for a little outfit in Walsall to be listed next to these big brand marketing giants in Marketing Week as a top 15 place to work in the UK is because our staff are on social media and all over the place talking about how much they like working here. And then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Then, you know, the awards just sort of, well, you were there the other night on the branding awards when we won 3 awards. You know, I think I've lost count. I think we've won almost 20 awards in the past year. And a lot of them, like things like Glassdoor or Marketing Week, are not things that we enter. They're things that people find us, and primarily because the staff are talking about how much they enjoy working here.
Yes. So we should probably mention that we're seated next to each other the other week at the Employer Brand Management Awards. And I think I had to leave a little bit early. You'd won one gong by then, but by the end of the night, you had 3, which is a fantastic achievement. And also, I'm looking at your Glassdoor reviews here, and the score is 4.5 out of 5, which is extremely high. And also, Martin Bennett is the highest rated CEO in 2016.
So Martin, you know, besides being in the top CEOs in Glassdoor twice, he won HR Magazine's People Focused CEO of the Year last year. Again, which is not an award we entered him in. they found him, and they found him off the back of doing web-based research and finding the, you know, looking for the best, especially when people are saying it. So yeah, we're very proud of Glassdoor, and having so many reviews, you know, if I had 20 reviews on there, it was 4.5, that'd be something. But to have 400 reviews and a significant amount of negative reviews in there. And when you just read what people write as a senior manager, and I look at everyone that goes on there, it gives you really quick directional, are we doing the right things or the wrong things?
I can also see your next challenge, Greg. HomeServe USA only have 3.7 on Glassdoor.
Yes.
Maybe that's next on the list. Okay.
I'll let them worry about themselves.
So if we look beyond HomeServe, what other companies inspire you in terms of culture and employer brand?
Well, I think, one of the things that I say a lot when I get to speak about employer brand is that we don't have an employer brand. We just have a brand. And our employer brand is exactly the same as our customer brand. And it is around that idea of, you know, take care of the people, they'll take care of the customers, and the rest will take care of itself. And so when I look at companies, the ones that I admire, they are the ones who do have a consistent strategy, and it's very apparent what they're doing. Because I think that is really critical for the staff to be engaged in what they're doing. And if you're one of these companies who has a customer-facing brand, and then you have an employer brand that's different, I think you're living two lives. And, you know, in today's age when, the staff, and I'll use the word millennials, are, you know, doing so much research and so hard to understand companies, that little bit of sort of two-faced nature is going to kill you. And so when I look at companies, I look at, you know, I love that Amazon, despite it, you know, not allegedly being a great place to work, their focus on the customer, you know, pervades everything they do. So I think people do like working there because they like that idea. It's the same thing for someone like Apple, or if you drop to a UK brand, John Lewis, you know, you really feel when you talk to someone in John Lewis compared to another department store that they will figure out a way to try to get you what you want. And you don't always get that. And it's that little extra bit that can really make the difference. So that's what I look for. I look for consistency in the brand, and then for the, you know, especially in a service brand, you know, you can go into the First Direct or wherever you want, but or a Metro, for the staff to be able to deliver that consumer-facing brand, that becomes the employer brand. And they're all really, really intertwined. And if you're going to be really successful, then they'll just be brand.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. Great. What's the next big thing for HomeServe, and where do you think employer brand or brand in general, where what do you think is going to happen there?
Well, I think from a HomeServe perspective, one of the things that we've done back in that strategy that I mentioned, the last thing on the strategy was to create a culture of innovation. And for a company of our size, we have been very, very successful in creating and working with a few companies to do things on the Internet of Things side of the coin. And so for making, you know, adding value to our customers and making their lives easier, we've invented some technology that we're working with all the large insurers to bring to market. And, you know, the idea for this company really is, you know, right now we do a great job of going out when someone has an issue. In the future, what would be the best state would be they never had an issue. You know, and you know, we make sure that that happens. Now, does that mean that we will cannibalize our own business? Absolutely. And, you know, and that's what we're going to do. And I think that's why things like Glassdoor and our presence on LinkedIn and other places, it's just really important to be out there about the things you're trying to do. Because if someone had told me 5 years ago that we would win the sort of Insurance Times Internet of Things Product of the Year or Market Gravity's Corporate Entrepreneur of the Year, I would have thought they were crazy. But, you know, now we have a hardware team sitting in Walsall. We have products rolling off the factory lines. And it's really just become an interesting next step in what we do. And it is all around that. How do we make things easier for the customers? And the staff are really bought into that. So I think the future is really bright for us. We've done a lot of things about getting the basics right and getting the staff to have that sense of purpose so that our customers feel, you know, not just satisfied, but actually cared for. And, you know, and then the next thing for us is to use technology in a better way to really help these customers.
Fantastic. So where can people connect with yourself, Greg, and where can we sign up for a gas boiler breakdown cover?
Yes. So you can sign up for cover at homeserve.com. Or if you're an Aviva customer, you can sign up for Aviva Response on Aviva's homepage. And then corporately, you can follow us in all the usual channels, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. And then personally, I write a lot of posts and blogs on LinkedIn, because one of the things that we decided to do when we did the strategy was we were going to be transparent with the staff, with the customers, with the media, with people like yourselves. So, you know, we haven't tried to keep our strategy secret. Every person in the company has it on a card. And if you're a manager, you have one of those nice acrylic tombstones sitting on your desk. And everyone knows what we're trying to do. So it isn't hard to find us.
Greg Reed, many thanks for your time.
Sure. Thank you.
All right. I hope that was useful. Everything Greg and I discussed will, of course, be in the show notes article, which you'll be able to find on Undercover Recruiter and employerbrandingpodcast.com. Now, in other news, as I mentioned last week, it's that time of the year again. Who likes bubbly? Who likes champagne? How about getting a bottle of bubbly sent straight to your desk? All I'd ask from you is to give an honest review of this podcast in iTunes or the podcast app, and then basically you're in the draw. Very simple. Many thanks in advance for leaving a review, and I hope you win. Also, if you'd like to learn more about Link Humans, the work we do, if you have any questions on employer brand, feel free to email me at jorgen@linkhumans.com. Okay, that's it for this week. Many thanks for tuning in, and catch you next time. Hej då!
I think one of the funnier things I've ever read is about the Australian Tax Service, and that they had a message that said, if you speak English, press 1. If you speak something else, press 2. And that amuses me. And I do think that in customer service, there are millions of examples like that. And, you know, people don't use their own products, which is why they don't know that that's awkward or odd. And so for us, one of the things that we did to make sure that that joke doesn't become a reality was for all 3,000 of our staff, we gave them our most expensive and full-fat product and said, go ahead, take this thing home and try it out. And then the only thing we want from you, we don't want any money, but when you call in and you claim and you have that engineer experience, whether it's good or bad, you need to let us know. And I think if more companies got the front line working for them like that, if they really got the staff to use the products, they wouldn't have a situation where they'd say, if you don't speak English, press 2.